Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Kenny, how you doing today?
I'm good, darling. How are you?
I'm hanging. I'm taking a little short, took a little short mini getaway down here in Carlsbad, which is before San Diego, with my mom, mother-daughter trip, and we just left the outlet.
Of course.
And I was like, okay, I gotta go, my show. So so it's been great. So good afternoon if you are on the West Coast. Good mid evening, early evening for the Central Timers. A little later evening for East Coast, and then it might be the next day for you, my international folks. We've got folks international. Kenny, can you even remember the countries? I know Ireland, Switzerland.
Ireland. Korea. We get a lot of listeners from China, Trinidad and Tobago. We get some listeners from Russia, South Korea, pretty much all over the planet. It's just amazing. I don't know what all these people in China are doing listening, but
you know, I keep thinking too, is a lot of the military bases are in some of these places. And so those are just probably folks that's just trying to search around and found us perhaps, you know?
I guess so in some of them, but places like, I don't think we have any bases in China. So wherever they are, we welcome them. We love having them.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. So welcome to the international folks. We love you. Thanks for listening. Today you're tuning in to In the Mix, Conversations with Colette and Corliss. Colette is out today, so we've got our engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Kenny.
So it's Conversations with Corliss and Kenny this time.
Corliss and Kenny this time, right. And we've got a couple of our board members on the line. I want to say hello to Teaser and Miss Pat. Welcome, welcome. And then we've got some faithful listeners that also listen to.
Thank you.
Hi, how are you? How you guys doing today, Teaser and Pat? Did I say it right?
Yes, by Tizer, but you know.
Tizer, there we go.
That's okay. You caught me in anything but late for dinner.
Okay. Whatever works, right?
And all this time, I've been calling him Teaser to go, okay, Tizer. Okay, man. We got it now.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would be Tizer because normally, you know, when you have the I, like, anyway. And then, of course, when you learn Spanish, the I is an E, and so who knows? Mm-hmm. Pat, how you doing today, honey?
I am doing fine. I'm out and about. I'm on my way home. We've had no air for 2 days.
Ooh.
And yesterday, they put a window air conditioner in, and that still didn't help. So we went to Costco and bought 2 fans for the bedroom. So
oh my God.
Hopefully I can sleep tonight.
Yeah, you know, I ended up getting one of those tower fans, and it comes with like the little blue ice that you put in the freezer, and you stick it in the back and you pour water. And so when it blows, it's cooler air because it's coming off from the however way it's doing it. I know I have to put that thing by my head. I can't even just put it in the room. It has to be up where my head is because my apartment does not have air, and it's 90 something degrees in LA. Even though today, right now, I'm in Carlsbad, which is about 20, 25 miles from San Diego. Carlsbad.
Yeah, I used to hang out there.
Oh, is that right? That was your spot, huh?
That was my spot, yes.
So we'll use the San Diego weather, and it's 72 here.
It's always 72 in San Diego.
It's 84 in LA, but in Vegas, 115. So I know, even though we might love Vegas, I'm glad we're not nowhere near the 115. So this week was kind of light. I didn't hear it was anything, nothing really, you know, we didn't have a car chase this week. We didn't have a car chase this week.
No,
it's
car
chase. Every other day it could be.
Yeah, the only thing that happened today is Biden met with Putin. And, of course,
right.
Interestingly enough, the Republicans are saying Biden was too weak with Putin.
It's right.
Like, are you kidding me?
So because he's reasonable and he makes sense and he ain't trying to make enemies, then he's weak.
And even
but
though,
instead, you want to call them out their name and say, you know, grab them by this, then that's strong, right? So what's he supposed to grab Biden by the? I mean, what's that supposed to make it strong, right?
I don't know. we live in amazing times, and that's not a good thing.
Well, good that there's nothing crazy going on, because it seems to be something every week. It's been something crazy, except for folks. We didn't have any shootings this week.
No,
but I'm sure sad about the woman at the grocery store just doing her job
in Georgia.
Yes. Yeah. You tell the man about the mask.
Uh-huh.
He walks out. Anytime somebody walk out mad, it's time for you to go.
Yeah, went out and got his gun. And see, he is ruined. She's gone. And of course, that family is devastated. Now his family is going to be devastated because he's going away forever.
Forever.
Because that's premeditated. Because he walked out. He walked out, got his gun. He had time to change his mind. So if his attorneys come up and say it was a spur of the moment, you know, a crime of passion. No, he had ample time, because if you just draw your weapon at the spur of the moment, somebody makes you mad, that would be like second degree murder because it was not premeditated.
Spur of the moment is I got my gun on me now and I shoot you. Leave and come back.
Leave and come back. Yep.
There's no such thing as a spur of the moment.
Yeah, spur of the moment. Yeah.
Well, he's got a hot.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying he's toast.
He can forget.
He'll spend the rest of his life behind bars. I don't know. Georgia has a death penalty, but you know,
if they can stop people from having water in the voting line, they should have death penalty.
They probably do. Yeah,
I would think. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a hot topic today. My guest is Mr. Greg Cheadle. Am I saying that right? You can come off mute now. Come on off mute. Come join the party.
Come join the party. Talk to Kenny.
Right. You know, we always just, because usually something is always going on, so we try to take that 5 to 7 minutes to just, you know, say, girl, did you hear about that? And, ooh, we this. And, you know, so we're doing pretty good today. Nothing major.
You're doing excellent today.
Other than that lady, I feel so bad for her. But that's why, you know.
Over a mask. A mask.
Right, over a mask. And then the other one where the little boy died 2 weeks ago was road rage. But again, you can't be pissing people off, y'all. I mean, let me just say again, if somebody gets in front of you, don't trip. Just let them. They obviously got to go somewhere. Let them go.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the time to be picking a fight and or tripping off of anybody, because they will kill you. Period.
Yep.
They will kill you or your son in the back seat who was on his way to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Well, the kid in Michigan, too.
Oh, that happened. There was one in Michigan.
There was a kid in Michigan who went to get his bike out of the yard. The Asian guy shot him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but shot him in the arm, right?
Fortunately, got him in the arm.
Yeah.
Fortunately, got him in the arm. Was in jail for a minute and got out. Then after the uproar, he went back. He was forced to go back into jail.
Okay.
Crazy.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let me just make sure I heard you right. Okay. What now?
A little kid. I think he was. Somewhere between 6 and 9, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Went in, his bike somehow got into this guy's yard. The guy was Asian. They had some words. The Asian guy said he'd get a sledgehammer or something silly. And instead, he shot through the window and shot the kid in the arm. Fortunately, got him in the arm. But had it gone to either side, the kid would have been dead. But anyway, the guy gets arrested. His bond was like $10,000, something really weak. He got out. Then after the uproar, they went back and got him. And now he has like $100,000. Something ridiculous.
No, he went back. Well, no, he got out. Once he got out, you're saying that because of the uproar, they went back and...
Oh, they had to.
Yeah. Well, they that's crazy.
Let me shoot somebody.
You'll still be there. You'll still be there. Well, I was speaking to my guest, Mr. Gregory.
Yes.
And we were chit-chatting about what he would talk about, and he started talking about this. I'm like, stop! Don't talk about it anymore. This is what the show is going to be about. And I thought this was so timely for those who may have not seen the promo. I'm just going to read it so that you can get a feel, and then we're going to jump right in it. There's a concerted effort to keep Black folks in their place. Last. Now that just stop right there. You know, we are at the bottom of the totem pole, period. Black. And then within Black, then you have men and then women, right? And then I guess Latinos most likely are right above us, then Asian, then white. So any combination of Black, then any combination of Latino, any combination of Asian, and then you get to Caucasian/white. But we are at the bottom. I don't care what it is. They want our culture. They want our food. They want our, when I say our culture, they want to, when I saw an Asian, because I don't know if he was Korean, Japanese, blah, 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 so I say Asian. When I saw an Asian sagging his pants, I was like, for real?
Yeah.
Now, I know that supposedly that's something that comes from a jail environment, and I don't even know if these kids know that that means that you're inviting someone for them to get with you. I didn't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah,
I know. With the sagging pants. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The sagging pants thing is letting you know I'm available. This is a jail thing. This is not a, you know, Crenshaw and Slauson thing. This is a jail thing. So it's so funny that, you know, that is what folks are walking around with. I mean, when you see a white boy or an Asian, I was just like, y'all really got y'all pants sagging. Like, that's off the chain. So just going on to read the rest of the promo because it was so powerful. Voting, politics, marches, and protests have gotten us nowhere. We are preyed upon economically by every group. So if we start rapping, now McDonald's got a rap song for the Big Mac. You know, Jack in the Box got a rap song. You know, it's just every little piece of our culture they have taken, capitalized, made money from, and we're still at the bottom. So when he started talking about this, I was like, stop. I don't want to hear no more. I want you to talk about it on the show. And that's why this show, today's topic, is straight out of last place. I was like, we got to get t-shirts. I mean, and matter of fact, I don't know if we need to get t-shirts to show it, but I mean, it was just so powerful when we were talking about this the other week, Greg. So why don't you go ahead and let us know, start us off with this, you know, where this is coming from, which we already know, but in your words, but first tell us about where you're from. Give us some background information, where you're from, what schools you attended, and what you're doing now. Hello, you're about to join the doctoral club in a couple of years.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about yourself, or tell the people about yourself.
Well, I think, I really don't like to talk about myself, but to give you a short snippet, you know, 5-time congressional candidate up in Northern California. And that's where a lot of this really took place for me as far as opening my eyes to a lot of things. Because prior to that, I had spent so much time trying to get into medicine, doing medicine. Ended up doing law, got a law degree. And I have a master's on top of that. So I had a master's and I got a law degree and was doing pre-med between those two.
Mm.
And anyway, so when I started running for Congress, it was just fascinating because the district where I was running, California District 1, California Congressional District 1, up in Redding, California, it's 1% Black. And so it was eye-opening because, you know, I was accepted for the longest. You know, I ran as an 1856 Republican, not a modern Republican, in 1856. Just to throw it in their face where they ought to be, because in 1856, the Republicans were sold out to principle, not party. They were sold out to principle. In other words, in 1856, the Republicans were killed along with Black slaves that they were trying to free. Mm. So I was one of the things that was important to me. But anyway, it really hit the fan when I came and sided with Colin Kaepernick with taking a knee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just blew up. I mean, people were just so angry with me. And, you know, from that point, a little bit before that, too, don't get me wrong. But then the whole society, there was just this shift that was palpable in that we do not want you to progress. We want to keep you right here. Mm. And we will do every single thing we can to keep you here. And one of the more interesting parts about that is if you go back to affirmative action was designed just like the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to redress the past. But the greatest beneficiaries of affirmative action are white women,
right?
Not Blacks, white women. And so everything that we do or attempt to do, there's always, we've been met with this incredible white resistance. And so when it comes to last, you know, straight out of last place, when you look at us as a group, we are last. We're the sickest group, even though we are on par with respect to the rates of disease, but we're dead last when it comes to those outcomes of disease. So for instance, you know, black women and white women tend to be pretty close with respect to breast cancer. But black women die at a much higher rate than white women. And so that's the issue with that. We're the poorest economic group of the four. We're the poorest. We have the lowest income. We have the lowest home ownership. And more importantly, we have the lowest home value of all those groups. We have the lowest of all those things. And we would be the lowest educated group, but the Hispanics beat us down on that one. But in everything else, we are low. We're last. And my whole point about all of this is that it's time that we get straight out of last place. And I'm tired of this.
So how do we get out of last place? I know, and I constantly say that there are a lot of things that we can do in our own community. You know, we always look externally to find out what can be done. But I'm completely on board with the fact that there's a lot of things that we need to do first. I think the 90% of the problems in our community we can solve. The other 10% are external. But if we can solve those 90, so what's your estimation on what are the types of things we can do to get out of last place?
Well, first of all, what we can do is start loving one another. If we started loving one, you know, like normally you get black people together, they want to fight, fuss, and whatever else. You can see two black people in an all-white setting, they won't speak to one another. And so something as simple as, you know, we've got to start loving one another. You know, we've got to start taking pride in who we are as a people. You know, who we are naturally, not somebody with all this, you know what I'm talking about. We have to take pride in who we are naturally. We got to get off the drugs and get back into the churches. We got to stop using the N-word. And that doesn't cost a penny. None of the things I've said so far have cost us a penny. We need to start in our mindset. We need to start striving for superiority rather than settling for mediocrity. We need to support and build black businesses, because one of the problems we have is employment. We have no place of our own to hire our own. And so we have to, that's what every other group does. Go to the Vietnamese, go to the Chinese, go to the Japanese, go to the East Indians, go to the, all of those people, they have businesses where they hire their own. And then we have to go beg somebody to hire us. So we can do it. We can build our own businesses. And so we build up our own businesses. And here's another thing that's really easy to do. If you own a home, get a few hundred bucks, paint the thing, get a nice paint scheme, put some landscaping in, increase the value. And when you go into black neighborhoods, I'm from Oakland, when you go into the black neighborhoods, we have some of the most beautiful homes, some of those old Victorian spacious homes. And what happens when whites move in, gentrification, they do what I just said. They spend a few hundred bucks, get some paint, put some flowers in, all of a sudden we have a white neighbor and the prices go up. So what we can do is keep our neighborhoods, take pride in our neighborhoods. Because when I was in Oakland, what I did, I'm telling you exactly what I'm preaching, what I've done. When I lived in Oakland, I lived on 81st Avenue, and arguably the worst part of Oakland, drive-by shootings, police chases every day. But I survived. But what I did, I redid the house. It was beautiful. Put in trees, put in plants. It was beautiful. Then guess what? My neighbors started taking pride in what I was doing and started painting their own houses.
And then the next neighbor. It only takes one person. It only takes one person to do it.
Yeah.
Everybody, you take pride in your house. So nasty that you have to do it.
Yeah. You take pride in your house. Your neighbor's going to take pride in theirs. And so it spreads. And then another thing, too, is that education. We need to take pride in our HBCUs. And for black men in particular, we need to stop thinking about being some professional athlete. The amount of time and money that we spend perfecting throwing a ball through some silly hoop, trying to make, you know, multiple millions of dollars, is ridiculous, because we have so many of our black men who have gone that route and who have not succeeded, and they're living miserable lives. Whereas if we took that same amount of energy, that same amount of time, you know, throwing this, and spent that reading, studying, do you know we would be on top of the world with respect to law, medicine, engineering? And so those are the things that we can do. And those are the things that we must do because I can't force you to study. You've got to study on yourself, on your own. And so those are the things that we have got to come to grips with. So instead of having these fantasies about being the next LeBron or whatever, have fantasies about being the top doc. Have fantasies about being the top attorney. Have fantasies about being the next Bechtel, the highest construction company where people from all over the world go to. Those are the things that we need to focus on.
Now, when you think about, and just to put a thing about, you know, is there anything wrong with playing a sports? Is there anything wrong with being an athlete? But why try being a scholar athlete? Because when you bust your knee open, guess what? And they say you can't play no more. What's your plan B? And that's one of the things I've always, when I was in admissions and just talking to students and parents and doing presentations, it's like, what is your plan B? Because first of all, I can't remember the percentage. Is it like 5%, Kenny? And you seem like you would know this, you're gonna look it up for sure. Like 5% of the kids that go into a college to play pro, I mean, to play college ball,
yeah,
get picked up to play pro.
Yeah, it's not even that high.
Yeah, it's not even that high. Yeah, it's extremely
not even close
low.
To being that
yeah,
high.
Yeah.
So when I understand, it's like, no, mama, I'm going to be that one. But yeah, I got you. I got your cleats. But I also need you to pick up a book. Because again, when you get injured, that scholarship that you get, unless you make sure you read, again, read. When the parents, you need to look when these colleges are saying, hey, you know, your son or your daughter can go here for free and we'll take care of everything. Make sure there's a little comment about it, what if I get hurt? Because I've seen athletes, you know, earlier. Now, I don't know if they changed it now because it's been such a funk, but I know about 5 or 10 years ago, you know, when somebody gets hurt, all of a sudden that money disappears because you're not making them any money. And then now you're stuck with this tuition that you never could afford, for example, USC, you know, Loyola, all these private schools, Stanford, you know, public mm-hmm. schools like Berkeley and UCLA, where you're going scot-free until you hurt yourself. And then what happens? Is that still going to, are you still going to pay for the next 3 years? Because I got hurt in freshman mm-hmm. year. Like, what does that look like? And then what major is that that you can then, I hate to say fall back on, but that's their thought process. My thing is always have a plan B anyway. And so because it's this, just a push to be, like you said, that LeBron James and that Kobe, you know, God rest his soul, Bryant, you know, again, those are few and far between.
And
you got to have a plan.
And your sports career, you got a finite amount of time
Very
to play
finite.
Sports. And I don't know if you know this, Corliss, the average in the NFL, the average player plays for about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
You know, the guys like Emmitt Smith that played for a long time and Michael Irvin, those guys are the anomalies. Most guys go in and out in 5 years. Uh-huh. And then what? Then they've got right. nothing else. And most of them are not smart enough and don't have the wherewithal. And we don't teach them to manage their money while they're there so that when the career is over, at least they've got some sort of nest egg that they can fall back on. But the other thing is that we have to have higher expectations in our community. Not only do we accept failure, but we expect failure. And that is a problem. We expect our children and our young people to fail. And again, when they do something outside of that, when they are a doctor or a lawyer, they do not get the same sort of respect as the ball player, the rapper, the pimp, and those sorts of things.
Did you say the pimp?
The pimp. Okay, not so sure. much anymore. We don't do that so pimp. Much anymore. Not but nonetheless.
But
you see what I'm saying?
Do they get benefits too?
Who's that?
The pimps, I just, you know.
Yeah, there's no.
Put them in
the, you know, no retirement. No 401k for a pimp. So we have to, you know, and Greg, you may be familiar with the Pygmalion effect. That's a phenomenon that people will live up to expectations you put on them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So as long as you have these expectations way down here, which a lot of us do in our community, they know, oh, well, you know, he can't do this. Well, that's what he's going to do. But if
right,
we have those
right.
higher expectations, there's a joke I heard recently that said an Asian kid has three career choices, doctor, lawyer, or disgrace to your family.
That is real talk.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that is real talk. And not to jump from the subject, but just on that alone, I remember a student who I taught, and I used to teach a class for students who wanted to be RAs or res hall assistants in the dorms, as people call them, but they're resident uh-huh. halls. And she got a B on a test and was in tears. And I'm like, girl, psh, a B. Woo, woo, right? You know, and I know I didn't study as well as I could have. I mean, like, a B, what? And she was in tears. And I'm like, what is wrong? She's like, my dad's going to pull me out of school if I get a B. Mm-hmm. I said, so you're supposed to get straight A's? Yes, that's what I've always done. And I can't. And I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to need you to breathe. Let's breathe together. And I'm sure that it was just a fluke. And let's just, you know, study for the next one. Make sure you're situated. Go talk to your professor, whatever that looks like. But she was devastated. Now, just like how excited I got about the B, just telling you the story, you know, and nothing's wrong with a B. Don't get me wrong. I was a strong B student. My sister was the A student. But I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, she knew, like you said, a disgrace. Mm-hmm. Not I'm upset, but a disgrace to the family. And we will never get to that point.
Yeah.
But well, and you know, Kenny, you said something that's so true, you know, about what we expect. And that's the danger of sports. You know, we put so much emphasis on saying you can play. You'll get to the NBA. You'll get to the NFL. But we don't put that same amount of faith in our brains. We don't say to our children, you know, you're smart. You can be this. You can use your brain. You can study organic chemistry. You can study biochemistry. You can study the law, criminal, whatever. We don't put that same emphasis with our children. And that's what we have to, that's what we must do.
Oh, well, you're right.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. And if you take someone like a Michael Jordan or LeBron mm-hmm. James or Steph Curry, anybody, and if they put the same amount of effort into becoming a biochemist or something of that nature, a doctor, an attorney, something, they'd be at the top of their game because they've got that kind of focus. But it would just be in a different area. It would be in the area of academia and every medicine, law, wherever it is. If they put that same amount of effort, if Michael Jordan put the same amount of effort into being a businessman that he did in basketball, you know, he would be surpassing Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos and Zuckerberg and everybody else. That's mm-hmm. how good he is at focusing on what he wants to do. You know, because we can do those things when we think about it. I'm very much into people who think outside the box. Tiger Woods, outside the box. There were hardly any black golfers. Simone Biles.
Magic Johnson.
Well, he was doing what everybody expected. Playing basketball. I'm talking about people
right,
in sports.
But I'm talking about after he finished playing basketball.
Well, I'm talking about people in sports that go places that we don't generally go. Oh, you know, okay. We play basketball, we play football, we don't play golf. They say we don't play. The Williams sisters, the race car driver on the Formula One, Lewis Hamilton. You know, so we can do the things we set out to do. We just have to start focusing on the brain instead of the brawn.
Yeah, and see, another thing about professional sports, too, is that, granted, we have these large contracts. Man, black folk ought to own Nike. I don't know why in the world we jump up and down and are celebrating some NFL or some NBA player getting a huge contract from Nike. We ought to own Nike. If we don't own Nike, then we should have put our money together and bought our own and made our own shoe company, because we've made multiple billions, tens upon, I don't know how many billions for those companies, whites. And what did we get out of it? Nothing. Or very little. I mean, not nothing, but very little. And so, you know, we have to start thinking collectively instead of, you know, singularly, because it's destroying us. Because we should, all those players should have gotten together and formed a company. And you know, hired our own people. The Asians would have done it. Hispanics would have done it. And, you know, good and well, the Jews would have done it. So we need to be that same way.
But see, the thing is, it's hard in the sense that folks can't work together because it's been this mentality that we don't come together and do things. Now, again, folks, we're talking in general. Obviously, there are some black folks that have done what we're saying they should do. So let me just start by saying that. We're not saying that it doesn't exist. It just should exist in greater numbers.
It starts with me.
Right, right. You know, and so, you know, when you talk about education and the talented 10th, you know, how many brothers have JDs? How many sisters have JDs? How many brothers and sisters have doctorate degrees? you know, that talented tenth of the black population. And so we've got to learn how to figure out ways to increase that by parents making sure that, yes, he can kick the ball through the thing, field goal, yay, do a layup or something, but can he also run a business? You know, does he have his MBA? You know, when being that I was at University of Southern California, also known as USC, fight on, one of the things that some of the players that I know that stayed in school, like after they finished whatever the basketball football thing, they still got their degree, and some of them have gotten their master's. And I know one for sure. Oh, I think he works for Deloitte. He was on the football team when we didn't lose for 3 years. We had 34 wins in a row. He was on that USC football team. He has his master's, his MBA, and he works for Deloitte, which is one of the top 5 accounting firms in the world. Okay, that's my mother's phone. Okay, well, we'll just let it go. So anyway, my point is, it's not a problem playing sports. Just do both. Make sure that you are, just make sure that you have that plan B, because that fact that you could get hurt is definitely at a higher stake than not.
Well, see,
Go ahead.
No, another point too is that the career is short, like Kenny said, but what's more devastating is that within 5 years, I forget what the percentage is, a high number of people who played sports are bankrupt or broke within 5 years of leaving the game.
Yeah.
Within 5 years, they're either bankrupt or broke.
And that's the same with our musicians, our rap artists, our singers, you know. And the best example, and trust me, can't touch this. Let's Get It Started. Pumps in the Bump. Those are my jams. But MC Hammer went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we get this money and we're so excited about it. I think Kenny or you mentioned, it's like, okay, let's, you know, put some money aside, make sure we have enough for, you know, if you have kids, you've set up college funds, or you at least have set up some kind of bank account for your kids, take care of your parents, do whatever that is. But you can still have the fancy car. Just don't spend all of it. And then when it's time,
he was living,
thinking the next album is going to be the bomb, and then it busts, then what?
I believe MC Hammer was living in a 100,000 square foot house.
For what?
No, it wasn't 100,000. Well, let me rephrase that. He paid $20 million for a house back in the 90s in Fremont.
Okay.
Fremont's a suburb south of Hayward.
Right.
Bought it up in the hills. $20 million back in the 90s in Fremont. It would have been different had he bought a house in Hillsboro or Atherton at that point in time. But Fremont? No way. And so he lost the house. I don't think that house even fetched $5 million. When the sale went through, I don't even think it was close to $5 million.
Wow!
But I mean, $20 million back in the '90s for a house—that was crazy. It was a large house.
Why do you need a $20 million house though? How many rooms was it? 20?
It was huge. He had big fountains.
It was
and
huge,
all.
Yeah, but it wasn't 100,000. Yeah. I know that much. It was huge. But I mean, the point being, $20 million back in the '90s.
But look at Floyd Mayweather, the boxer.
Oh yeah, look at him
taking pictures with rooms full of money and this and that and the other thing. It's like, okay, yeah, and then what are you doing?
Right.
You know, and he just had his house broken into.
He did?
Yes. And he's offering $100,000 to find the people who did it. Dude, wow. You got all that money, and your house got broken into. I'm sorry, you're an idiot.
I mean, your security system was not on par. You didn't spend that money on the security system.
Yeah, but again, the rappers walk around with the gold chains, the big giant gold chains, all this fake wealth or fake riches. You know, they make these videos and they go rent these boats, these yachts, and they have all these women out there rent these fancy cars. And then when it comes time to get paid, they don't realize all that money to rent that those Rolls Royces and those yachts comes out of their money. Mm-hmm. That comes out of their money. That's not the record company paying for it. That's them paying for it. And you know, there's a few rappers that have made it big, obviously, and I'm not big on names, Dr. Dre and the other guys and Snoop and stuff. But again, just like sports, the vast majority don't make it. You just don't make it. You have a few that do, you know, and for the most part, there's no longevity in it. So what are the sorts of other types of things are can we do? And one of the things I always talk about is people owning businesses, understanding the importance of customer service. We don't seem to understand the importance of customer service.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I love my people, but I just don't get it sometimes.
Well, you know, again, it starts with me. And so, you know, we have to work individually and somehow get to critical mass where we're making a significant impact. It's going to have to be a ground roots thing. You can't go to school and learn. You know, it's something we've been screwed for so long that it's just hard. We just can't go from 0 to 60 in 2.2 seconds. You know, it's going to take us a little while, but it starts with you and me and you know, Dr. Bennett, it starts here. And so we have to be that example to people. You know, it's like not only must we be the example, but we must be the teachers and the pioneers. You know, if you get bad service from a black company or business, you just tell them why their stuff is bad, and help them to get better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Patronize them if they get better, but if they don't get better, say you're sorry, you just can't do that anymore.
Right.
You know, and hopefully the message will come across. And, you know, let them know you have a lot of friends, a lot of listeners who would love to support them if they do it right. So we have to encourage one another, because too long we've always been beaten into doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have to use the carrot as opposed to the stick to encourage and lift one another up in business.
There's a local, some folks out of, I think it's Tennessee, opened a chicken place here, Helen's Chicken, great chicken. And they opened, and I went in there a while back, and one of the guys cooking had his pants sagging. And so I got home, went on their website, and there's a little contact us. And I said, listen, you know, I'm black, love your chicken, love that you guys here, love supporting you, but please, I don't want to see your cook's underwear when I come to get my food. And I said it in a very pleasant manner. I wasn't, you know, pointing my finger in the face. I just said, I just don't want to see the cook's underwear. And I've been back. I haven't seen any cook's underwear. Now, did they tell, was it me that did it? I don't know. But maybe several people have complained. I don't want to see their underwear. So little things like that. I could have said, you know, I'm not coming back here. And they've done some other things that I've thought, they need to do it a little bit differently. But I continue to support them. And I support every time there's a black business around. I do everything I can to support them. But when we go to businesses, again, people need to understand customer service is key. When you're retail, a restaurant, some sort of retail store, you have to shut down all that pride and all that I ain't taking nothing from nobody sort of thing, and be a person that understands customer service. That's why you don't see a lot of black folks, waiters or waitresses. You know, because we just don't seem to have that sort of what's the term I'm looking for? Internal fortitude to put it all away and give. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so used to being beat down and everything else. Somebody says a little something, and then we want to fly off the handle, and we can't do that. So it's both ways. It goes both ways.
That customer service, I'm not sure if Maya Angelou said this, but it's a quote about people don't remember what you did. They remember how they made you feel.
Yeah.
And so like I said, me and my mom and my sister were just at the outlets and at the cosmetic store, and we were picking up some MAC or whatever because it's much cheaper than going to Macy's and getting it. And the women were so, oh, by the way, did you check out in the back? There's a $5 thing that has some Mac back there, and I ended up buying that. And you know, and they showed my mom, oh, this is a nice color for you, try this, what does this look like? And so when you feel like that, you don't mind dropping your money in that type of a store. You know, you don't mind, because it's like, you know, when we walked out, we was like, they were so, Kathy said, my sister's name is Kathy, they were so nice. I said, yes, and in all of the cosmetic stores that I've been to, they've been so nice, and that's why I continue to go back. And when something is not right, I was like, yeah, I said, is it, you know, where's the manager? I am the manager. I said, oh, good. Let me tell you. You know, the way you're talking to me now or whatever that, whatever the issue is, I let them know, like, you know, this is not cool. And, but what's really interesting when you do that to us, there's a restaurant, ooh, that was in LA off of King. Oh man, I can't think of it. I brought a group. It was my turn. So we would have lunches every month. And so somebody would pick where we would meet for lunch. And it'll dawn on me. Not M&M's. I can't think of it right now. But was there. We were upstairs in the like the little conference room where you could have like 10, 15 people. And we're having our meeting. And I'm starting to eat. And a roach falls from the ceiling and just misses my plate. About, and I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and his little antennas are doing that. And I was like, okay, I have just lost my appetite. And so the waitress came. I said, where's the manager? I said, do you see this? You do see this. I'm not making this up. She's like, oh my God, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I'll go get the manager. I said, yeah, go get the manager, because I'm not going to finish this, and therefore I'm not going to pay for it. Do you know that when the person came in, and I told him, and he was like, well, you wouldn't complain if you was in Beverly Hills. I looked at him. I said, you know what? I need you to go ahead and count this meal, because I'm not going to pay for it. And see this money that I helped make you make? We will never be back. Because your attitude in trying to justify this roach dropping down from your ceiling that just missed my plate by, you know, it's just like, why are you mad at me? You're the one with the roaches.
Yeah.
But he just thought, oh, but I would never do that if I was on Rodale Drive. Well, first of all, I'm not going to be on Rodale Drive. And second of all, it don't make, if it was a roach, if roaches can be wherever. And so it's just like that attitude that instead of just saying, oh my God, ma'am, we are so sorry. Let me take this little $15, you know, whatever greens and cornbread and macaroni cheese with the whatever off so that I know you will come back. Then for me to say, I'm not going to come back, and I'm telling everybody I know to never eat here.
Yep.
And so, it's, you know, what is that? That's the kind of thing that keeps us on the bottom.
Well, we have to, look what I said earlier, we have to strive for superiority as opposed to mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have to have the mindset, okay, this is my restaurant. This is going to be the best restaurant.
Right.
It's not going to be just a restaurant. It will be the best restaurant. And when we take that attitude, oh my goodness, doors will open like crazy. And I'm speaking from experience. I didn't own a restaurant, but I built luxury playhouses, you know, throughout California and even into Arizona. And my whole thing was I was going to be the best, period. My playhouses were built better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, you know, I got in Better Homes and Garden, got in Coast Magazine, got in Orange, got in all these magazines. Because I took the road that I'm going to be the best. And you talk about customer service. I was at client. If a client called me and said there was something wrong, I would be at their house at night.
Yeah.
You know, really. I would drive. I had clients several hundred miles away. I would drive to that house at my expense to take whatever needed to be taken care of. And when you have that attitude.
People want to do business with you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a positive mindset, because you know that if you handle that, they're going to tell two friends, and that friend's going to tell two friends, and they'll be like, well, I'm going to buy a house from this guy, or I'm going to go with his agency, or I'm going to go back to that dentist, or I'm going to go back to that.
Exactly. Doctor.
But, you know, when you go to a high-end restaurant, you don't go there for the food. Now, the food's going to be good. But to me, there's a ceiling on most food, how good it's going to be. There's a ceiling on how good it's going to be. But there's no ceiling on customer service, right. You know. One of the best dinners my wife and I had, this was before we left California. We had both worked late. I can't remember what the whole circumstances were. We were way down on Sunset Boulevard, one of the restaurants down there. And it was late. It was like we were having a late dinner, like 9 o'clock at night, like on a Friday or something. I can't remember. We had four waiters. We had four waiters because the place was half empty. There was not a lot. We had one bringing us the food, one standing around pouring the wine, one taking the plates away. Every time we finished something, it was you know, a $200-$300 meal, but didn't mind paying it because we had that level of customer service, you know, that, and so people are willing to pay for that kind of service. But again, and see, had that happened in Beverly Hills, the guy would have handled it completely differently. Ma'am, I'm sorry. I'm going to comp your entire party. Your entire
party. Matter of fact, here's a gift card for you to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Make it right.
Yep, yep. And see, what people don't understand is you lose more. You think you're going to, it's what is the old saying, penny wise and pound foolish?
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to cut corners here and that and everything, and people notice that. You're going to lose more than the little bit it takes to go to that extra mile, that little extra thing. And I've been known, I've done things where I've gone to a place and I've had great customer service from someone black. And I call back. I'll call back to the department store or somewhere, talk to the manager and said, hey, you know, Laquanda was really good. She did everything I wanted, you know.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And I have no problem doing that, you know.
But and it encourages them too.
Yeah.
So, Greg, if you were to be able to summarize, like, in three things that would help us at least start thinking about coming out the bottom, coming out of being last. You said education.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, you know, if you can, you know, what else can we do so that our listeners can start to begin to think about this as we try to get out of last place?
Well, you know, it's like I said, I think that the first things I said were critical. You know, we have got to start loving one another.
Right.
You know, we use the N-word. Forget, no, don't use that. You know, address me as your brother. I'll address you as my sister in love. I can't express it enough because I don't know of any other group that hates one another as much as we hate ourselves. None. You know, and so that has got to be, because when we start loving one another, it's then that we can lift one another up. I can't lift you up if I don't love you. I don't want to. But once we start loving one another, then that's when we start developing this mindset, you know, collectively that, okay, we're going to start ascending, because with that love is going to come respect. And with respect comes patronizing your business. And with patronizing your business comes building up another business. You know, it comes to, okay, look, these joint ventures. You got a few bucks. Let's pool our money like everybody else and buy this, buy that. Let's invest in this. Let's invest in that. So that love alone is going to really start making a difference.
Why are the churches doing more to promote love within the community?
I think the churches went materialistic. You know, the church just says, you know, name it, claim it. You can have your Benz. You can have your Rolls Royce. You can have your Bentley. You can have your house. So the church went that way instead of going the love way.
Hmm.
You know, because people will be drawn. Oh, I need a new job. I need a new house. I need a wife. All these things, all these material possessions, so forth and so on. It drew a whole lot of people. You know, T.D. Jakes, that's what he's talking about. Oh, you've been down and out. You're going to get a blessing, blah, 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 blah. Fine, but you don't love your brother, so what good is the blessing?
Hmm.
You know, there are pastors who just flaunt
mm-hmm.
these things they have and won't share anything.
Hmm.
T.D. Jakes ought to be giving stuff away, as much money as he has, but no, there's never enough money. You know, and so, the churches have just gone materialistic, mainstream, as opposed to they'll know that we are Christians by our love.
Hmm.
Fred well, Price, my before my dad moved to Arizona, he lived up on one of the Dons up in Baldwin Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And his neighbor across the street, the neighbor's son was a pilot. Neighbor's son flew for Fred Price for a while.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Until Fred Price told him, now he wasn't a member of Fred's church, but Fred Price told him he was going to have to tithe 15% of his salary to the church.
But he's not a member of his
church. He's not a member of the church. He was his pilot in his private jet.
Yeah, Gulfstream 3.
Yeah. So he quit. Why would you're going to pay me and then I'm going to have to give you 15% back?
And you're not a member. See, the key thing is you're not a member. Wow.
Yeah. So that's right what you're saying, Gregory. Yeah. They went totally materialistic. That's a few dollars more, a few dollars here, a few dollars there. And I've heard black pastors say things like, well, we can't do that because we'll lose our 501(c) if we start talking about politics. Well, what about Paula White and Franklin Graham and all of these white preachers who are out talking about politics every single day and they're not losing their 501(c)?
Wait a minute. My loss, is that a requirement to have a 501(c)?
It's a requirement if you want to make it tax deductible.
Yeah.
That you yeah, yeah.
So they're going to lose their tax deductible status. So.
Yeah. And yeah. So like if I have a 501(c), there's other things as well. Then you can give me money and you can write it off in your income taxes.
Right. I get that. But what's that have to do with what Kenny is saying?
Well, because they want to because churches are nonprofit and they're 501(c), they're nonprofits, they don't pay taxes, and there's a whole bunch of tax implications behind that. And then people can give them money and write it off on their taxes, and that's how they get more money coming in. My problem.
No, but you said something about the politics piece.
Because black preachers, pastors talk about they don't want to talk about politics because they'll lose their tax exempt status. But white.
So that's what I'm saying. By doing that, that's what I'm saying. That's a requirement of 501(c) that you can't take sides politically?
That's what they say. But white preachers do it all the time.
Here's the thing. If you have this is the problem that churches went into. They should not have been 501(c)s in the first place. They should have just kept it straight religion. And so by being straight religion, you have a lot of things that you're exempt from. Because as a religion, I can say whatever I want. And part of that was the Johnson Amendment back in the day. But if I'm not mistaken, Trump got that taken out, so it's no longer applicable. I don't know if they put it back in. But since that was taken out, now churches have the ability to speak that way. But if your church is a 501(c), then you come in under another umbrella of rules and regulations.
Interesting.
Oh yeah.
So we said love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can love each other within the black community. And since we're talking about that, education, the
our community. Yeah, and take pride in ourselves. I mean, we're the only group that when you look at black folk, it's comical sometimes. I bet the KKK laughs so much. You know, take pride in who we are naturally. You know, this is what I got. I'm not blonde. You know, I don't have straight hair. That's not me. So whatever we have, whether it be the lips, the hips, whatever, take pride in what we have. Don't try to look like, you know what I'm saying? Don't try to look like them. Take pride in who you are. And when you get that, when you start taking pride in who you are, guess what? Other people are going to start saying, oh. They have pride. I guess I can't put them down anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Wow. And I don't know why it's so difficult, but like you said, we have all these different obstacles and, you know, folks are trying to get out and move to the deluxe apartment in the sky. And that's kind of like, you know, be it a $20 million house, whatever it is, it's still, you know, the deluxe apartment in the sky, but then don't think about what are the steps to get to that point? So when you get that money, they want to go straight there. But then, like you said, they don't set a foundation for their kids. They don't leave a legacy, you know. So if I have a business, I want to keep in the family. I want to train my son or daughter to work there, to own it. So then when I pass on, you know, Johnson's Chicken Shack will continue to be Johnson's Chicken Shack. And the great grandchild will have it, and the great, great, great. But we don't do that. I don't know. I can't think of any black owned business in Los Angeles that has that kind of legacy in my mind. I'm thinking, and maybe somebody will text it to me, but I can't think of one.
It may be a funeral home somewhere.
Well,
and if you look at other ethnicities, they got their families working there, and sometimes it's three generations.
Right.
You know, we have a problem doing that, you know, and that's something we need to fix. You know, sometimes you'll see the little kids, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 years old, you know, doing their homework behind the counter.
That's right.
Right.
You know, because the dad owns a convenience store. You know, and we've got about 7 minutes left, but I want to tell this quick story. I went to see a friend of mine play. I'm a musician, Greg, so a friend of mine was playing down in South Dallas. This was a few years ago. It was a little juke joint kind of place, and they didn't serve alcohol. And in Texas here, if most places, if they don't serve alcohol, you can bring your own. So So they didn't serve. Yeah, interesting. So they didn't serve alcohol at this bar. So there's a little convenience store across the street. So my other friend and I decided to walk across the street, grab ourselves a couple of beers so we could take back. It was owned by Asians. And outside, there was some brothers hanging outside. You know, there was all these cars in the parking lot. These guys are hanging out outside. And there was a young guy, like in his mid-20s, opening the door for one customer at a time. And I think there was a kid in the back, like doing her homework or something like that, of course. And it apparently was family owned in the whole bit. But we continue to see that in our neighborhoods. And then we complain. Uh-huh. Them damn Asians, they come and do this and they do that. Well, you allow them to. If you don't like how they treat you, why do you continue to go back? And if they left, where would you go? You know, so we've got, and again, those are the types of things that we have to fix to try to get straight out of the last place.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, that everybody preys on us. They come into our neighborhoods and open up their businesses. We support them.
We're low-hanging fruit, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, try opening a black business, opening up in any other neighborhood. You're not going to be able to. And so that's why we have to come together, because the only difference between us and them is a lack of cohesion. Hmm. If we were a cohesive force economically, man, we would be way out there. And that's what is the things that I described earlier. Those are things we're going to have to do in order to get to where we ought to be, not where we are right now, but where we ought to be.
By the way, I just looked up the Johnson Amendment and prohibits all 501(c) from endorsing political candidates. And yes, the former guy did sign an executive order easing that. So that, because, you know, he's got all these evangelicals supporting him. That's why he did that. So,
Interesting. So it was not because of any kind of freedom. It was because those people can then endorse him.
Endorse him. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. Yep.
And the other thing I was saying was to build up our neighborhoods. Why is it that the values of our houses go up just because somebody white comes in, paints it, puts in some plants? We ought to be doing that ourselves.
It's not that hard.
That's where our money is.
It's not that hard.
No, it's easy. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah. You just go do it. Again, yeah, just mow your lawn. Cut your grass.
Mow your lawn.
Right. Yeah. Let's just start with that. Can you keep your grass right, really?
Yeah, that's all. That's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of paint here and there. You know, fix what's broken.
Plant from Lowe's or off a Home Depot. I mean, it is so simple, but we don't think like that.
Get the old refrigerator off the front porch.
I'm going to need you to know I have that. Yeah.
Yeah, take it to the recycling.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it's old. You're not going to use it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but again, you're right. It's what we can do.
Yeah. And then also, you know, I get sick and tired of seeing these black kids with high GPAs going to Ivy League schools. We need to challenge those kids to come to our own schools.
Oh, okay. So you're saying, okay, you finished the statement. I was like, why is that, you know?
Because they think the Ivy League is the place to go. They think Harvard, Yale, Princeton, those are the places, blah, blah, blah. But every time our brightest minds go into their schools, it builds up their stuff at the risk of tearing ours down. And I'm simply saying our schools would be even better if our people would go to them instead of going over to the Ivy Leagues.
Interesting.
So we need to take pride. The only reason they don't go is because we don't take pride in our – we don't take pride in Howard, Meharry, Morehouse, all those other HBCUs. We don't take pride in them. And we need to. We need to say those schools have been here for centuries. They've withstood the test of time. The problem we have right now is more white folk are going to our schools almost than we are.
No, you're right.
Because we don't emphasize education.
Yeah.
And again, we expect failure. We expect failure. So
it's interesting. When I was at USC, we did this alternative spring break where we would go to the South and do service in the South and working with Habitat for Humanity, working on homes. And so we did that. The year I actually went on the trip with them, we were in Alabama and we stayed at ASU, which there is Alabama State University. Mm-hmm. And so we got there on a Friday afternoon. And so then it was time to, you know, we stayed on campus. We were able to work with their, you know, departments to stay on campus. And when we went to the cafeteria, the spot, first of all, let me just say on a side note, it smelled so good as we were walking up. I was like, oh my God, what do they have? Catfish and greens and okra. And I'm like, I would be bigger than a house trying to go to a HBCU. So I'll just start with that. But moving on, I digress. So we get our food and the selections, I'm like, y'all got peach cobbler and not no funky apple pie. And I'm like, I'm holding my head like, I'm glad we're going to be here a week because that I can't. So we sit down and I look over and there's a table full of white students. The reverse of what you see in a PWI, which is predominantly white institutions, is always just us at the table, one or two tables of us and everybody's white. This was the complete opposite and it tripped me out. And I'm like, wow, what a reverse. But it was a nice full table. And they had golf scholarships, volleyball scholarships. They were white athletes, y'all. I couldn't believe it. And the only reason why I knew this, because a girl had on a Torrance High School t-shirt. And so she saw the USC and I looked and she smiled and I smiled. And I was like, hey, how are you? I said, where do you go? She's like, Torrance. I said, my nieces go to West High, because this was when they were still in high school. I said, what you doing in school? Like, oh, I got a volleyball scholarship. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking in my mind, for real, we just can't have nothing, huh? In my mind. And I'm like, wow. She's like, yeah, and he plays this and she plays that. And he's on the team, she's on the team with me and they play. And I'm like, white scholarship athletes at the HBCU. Wow. But you're right. More and more are going. Because they're going because they're, you know, athletes, and B, they're getting money to go just like anybody else. So it's really interesting to see that role reversal, but it's also interesting to see, it's like, can't we have something to ourselves? Can't we just, you know, why we got to share? So I just have mixed emotions on both sides because, you know, again, our black athletes are going to predominantly white college institutions, you know. Anyway, so just wrapping it up, so because we are at time and this goes by really fast, like I told you, education, well, loving yourself, number one. So these are the things that's going to help us get straight out of the bottom, or straight out of last, I should say. Mm-hmm. Loving yourself first, because if you don't love yourself, ain't nobody going to love you. Loving each other, meaning within the black community, right? Mm-hmm. Supporting each other in our endeavors. Education. And then once you do get out there and own your own business and do something, have the customer service and respect for your patrons so they will continue to come back. Because if you make me mad, I'm not coming back. And I don't care what you are, what kind of business this is, I'm going to let you know and say, you know, you just really lost a customer today. I just wanted to tell you that, sir. And this, you know, is why.
There was a famous, I don't know if it was chicken, I think it was barbecue up in Oakland. It was world famous. Little hole in the wall place in Oakland for ribs.
Best kind.
What's his name went there? Not Carter. Bill Clinton went there. Clinton,
oh, okay. Yeah. I can see that.
So that's the type of people that it attracted. It was so popular because the food was good and the customer service was good. It wasn't this Beverly Hills place. It was this little hole in the wall place in Oakland that had good service and good food. And that's what we need to model.
No, you're right. So how are we going to get that straight out of last? You've heard the different, from his opinion, our opinion about how to do that. We are out of time. Man, this hour goes by fast.
Too fast.
Thank you so much, Greg, for coming and dropping your knowledge and sharing your knowledge and giving us something to think about as we should be thinking about always. Thanks to the listeners out there who continue to support our radio show, Intentional Talk Radio Network. And I guess that's it, huh, Kenny? Golly.
Well, thank you both. I really appreciate everything, you know.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. We'll have to have you back on and have some more conversations. Enjoy it.
Well, until then, folks, we'll see you next week at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'll see you for Mindful Mondays on Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Until then, peace out.